Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. The focus of today's show is housing, specifically the lack of it, especially for those earning minimum wage or not much higher. The Clatsop County government has just released the preliminary findings of a $100,000 housing study examining all aspects of housing countywide. The study's goal is to help policymakers and officials understand the type, size, location, and price of housing needed to meet current and future demands, as well as market forces, regulations, and local barriers that impact housing development. Here to speak about those findings are the newly elected mayors of the county's largest community, Astoria, and of its third largest and most rapidly growing, Warrenton. Bruce Jones is a retired Coast Guard commander, the deputy director of the Columbia River Maritime Museum, and an Astoria City Councilor. He was elected mayor in the November election and will assume the helm in January. Henry Ballensiefer is the communications manager for Lectro Incorporated in Warrenton and chairs the Housing Studies Technical Advisory Committee. He was appointed last year as Warrenton's mayor and was elected to his first full term earlier this month. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Bruce and Henry.
Thanks for having us on, Joan.
Well, I'd like to start just by hearing your first reactions to the preliminary findings of the study. Henry, why don't you start?
Thanks, Joan. The housing study, first off, the consultants that were hired, this came about from a countywide meeting of all elected officials that the county had actually called, and that was about 2 years ago, I believe. And this was the second meeting of its type, and the county had presented a housing study that came out of Tillamook because there was a lot of, before the meeting, they were asking about topics that cities wanted to talk about. Housing was the top one that everyone wanted to talk about. And so they said, hey, there was a study done. It gives you data, aggregates all the data for the whole region. You can look at it, and then you can strategize, and there's some provided suggestions for strategies that governments could enact to meet these challenges. And so the study came about because all the cities decided to pitch into it. So the county put in 50 grand and the cities all put in 10. The stipulation was that the cities all had very different economies and housing situations. The need was the same everywhere around, but how the communities were made up, like Seaside's a vacation kind of destination, Warrenton's not exactly that unless you're going camping. And so everyone had different needs and requirements. And so part of that study was that the cities would get kind of more localized information. And that's what the housing study provided. My initial reactions to the findings were, we've got some cities who are ahead of the curve in getting information in terms of they know what is buildable and what's not. Astoria, for example, had advanced studies on what was a seismic, which properties had seismic issues and which didn't. And matter of fact, there was a survey done not too long ago where they actually physically checked every site. And so they had a good idea of, okay, this is not buildable property because it's not seismically stable. Warrenton, on the other hand, has some pretty old buildable lands inventory information. Its national wetlands map's been contested for a long time. It's probably 97, I think, was when it originally was put together. Don't quote me on that, but I wanted to say around that era. And times have changed, regulations have changed, and a lot of Warrenton's, my reactions for Warrenton's information was, we've got some information we need to update. The consultants are only as good as the information they receive or can access. And as that result, some of the information is going to be updated. City of Warrenton is actually going to be doing a buildable lands inventory through a housing needs assessment we've got a grant for, and updating that with the same consultants, Angelo Planning Group, who did the county housing task force or county housing study. So my hope is that we'll be able to integrate that new information into the county study. And I think that will update the numbers quite a bit because there's a lot of wetlands in Warrenton that are virtually undevelopable unless you want to pay $600,000, $700,000 for a home because it'll cost $300,000 to $400,000 to mitigate for.
And those were showing as available buildable land.
They currently do on the city maps, yeah.
Even though obviously they're not.
Yeah. And we have some legislative proposals that we'll be considering here in the future to deal with that, but that's another story.
Okay. Bruce, what were some of your reactions to the housing study results?
Yeah, thanks, Joan. I just want to thank Henry, first of all, for taking on a leadership role with the study. And the fact that we're working together across the county in different jurisdictions is a sign of that coordination and communication that we need to collaborate and come up with effective solutions. But the one of the biggest issues that I took away was just the numbers on the average income, and the average income, the mean income, and then the average wage earner salary in Astoria. And when you look at those numbers of what is affordable at those different income points, and the fact that only 4% of the homes built in the last, I think, 10 years are even affordable for the average household income, which is $69,000 a year, and there's zero homes have been built in the last number of years that are affordable for the mean household income or the average wage worker income. It just tells you that affordable housing issue really is significant. With regards to affordability, with the rise in construction costs in the last several years, really we need to look at outside sources to help with grants. We've talked about the Merwin Hotel in the past.
Right, and next to City Hall.
Yeah, and so, you know, having an outside group purchase that building and then try to get grants from the state to construct those 40 affordable housing units, I think, is critical. But when only 3% of the housing in Astoria is subsidized housing, and that's pretty much true across the county, it really tells you there's a need at the state level and the federal level for more grant money for as far as the low-income housing goes.
Yeah, the lack of affordable housing struck me when looking at the results. The average income in the county is, a household income, is $69,000. But the median income, which, if I'm correct, is more reflective of how much people actually earn, is $52,000. And the average home price, I noticed, in Astoria, Seaside, and Warrenton is roughly $300,000. So that would seem to be well out of the range of most families. And the new homes being built are in that $300,000 plus range. So how do we go about... I mean, what can we do to get more state and federal grants, if that's what it takes, or just in general, more affordable housing constructed here?
Well, I think we need to define affordable housing first. That's an elusive figure, I think, and that's something that this housing task force is really, this housing study is really boiled down because, well, first off, in general, costs have gone up across the board. Taxes in general, I mean, we've seen a lot of bonds. I was actually kind of surprised at the level of willingness voters were to take on additional indebtedness in terms of the bonding for both the schools, the jail. Typically, bonds that go against each other fail, and they both passed very well, actually. And so the economy is doing much better than it has in a long time. But so... I think people that 10 years ago would have been, oh, this should have been $650 rent, $700, $800 rent is affordable. Costs increase, you know, everything from minimum wage to cost of materials and labor. And so everything increases with that, whether or not your income, especially if you're on a fixed income, does. But the housing study kind of said that it estimated affordable rent for the average household income, which is $69,000. It's about $1,400 a month for rent. And that the estimated affordable home price, which this is the top level for affordable home prices, is $240,000. The median household income is $52,000, as you said, Joan. And that estimated affordable rent is actually around $1,100. And that estimated affordable home price is about $190,000. And if you were just doing average wage per capita, keep in mind that average wage is kind of a finicky statistic because there's people that work part-time. There's a different, it's not a clear picture, I would say, in terms of you know, actual wage earners. But you know, that's about $37,000 average wage in the county. That estimated affordable rent's about $900, and a house would be about $150,000. I'm a relatively new homeowner. I bought my home about 4 years ago, and it was my first home. And at the time I was trying to buy it, I was trying to get USDA loan, which is you can put zero money down. You know, it's because we live in a rural area. You're qualified for that. There was a 35-day wait period, and the person I was trying to buy the house from said, I've got buyers up the yin-yang right now. So either you get a conventional loan or this is, you know, we're moving on. And so I ended up getting a conventional loan, which was just a little bit higher. And I actually ended up being able to refinance for lower. But, you know, my home cost was, I think, $180,000 4 years ago. It's a fixer-upper. It's not new housing by any means. But when I looked at the tax and the valuation and the sales, like 7 years ago, it was $100,000. That jump that quick.
Oh yeah.
And now still... it's like 225, I think.
Yeah.
And so part of this is market forces that are driving the cost up. Labor shortages are driving up the cost to build, and wetland mitigation is driving up, and environmental constraints are driving up significant costs for, particularly in Warrenton, but I know across the county, the cost to develop land that is empty at this point.
Yeah, it seems so frustrating to hear that so many people can't afford the average rent.
Mm-hmm.
And at least in Astoria, apartments, one bedroom are going for $1,000, $1,200. That's not uncommon at all. I'd say that's more in the average range. And I assume that's, yeah, one bedroom isn't going to house a family.
Some of the more moving comments I heard, Joan, when I was walking door to door during the mayoral campaign, I remember knocking on doors in Emerald Heights and having a few people say their greatest frustration was they've been living there, saving their money until they can afford to buy that fixer-upper house. And that fixer-upper that 4 years ago, well, that was $180,000, they said it's $250 now and I'll never be able to afford it. And just the frustration in those voices that this dream I had to be able to buy a fixer-upper and it's I've missed my window because the prices are beyond that level now.
Bruce brings up a really good point. Actually, you'd think it would be strange. Warrenton typically has always been lower housing costs than Astoria because Astoria's got a view. It's got all that other stuff. The median home sale price in Astoria was $274,200. Now, that's gone up, obviously, since then. But that was partly because Astoria had a bunch of fixer-upper older homes, small homes. Warrenton's median home price was $307,000. You know, I would have never dreamed 5 years ago that Warrenton would ever be more expensive to buy a house in than Astoria. Obviously, tax is a different story, but it's illustrative of what the issue is going on. And I think when you say, like, what can we do? The number one thing at this point, because I don't feel that, especially in Warrenton, the tax rate is so low. It's $1.67 per $1,000 assessed value. Astoria is $8.17 per $1,000 assessed
value. Oh, my goodness, what a difference.
You know, when the water, well, I'll put it this way, what we made in water in 1 year from Pacific Coast Seafoods plant was about a third of the entire property taxes we collected that went into the general fund for the city of Warrenton that year, too. I mean, it was that, you know, property taxes account for that little in Warrenton. And so tax incentives to developers is not going to be the answer, not in Warrenton at least. It might be in other communities. But what we need to be talking about is denser housing. It's not popular, not at all. People want their McMansion, 1,500 square foot homes with three bathrooms, five bedrooms. Everyone wants that, you know, kind of that size house right now. That's where the market's building. But we need those 1950s style homes, 1,000 square foot, you know, three bed, maybe one and a half bath, small homes. And if you look at, that's where we're missing the starter homes. We're missing the place where people can start building equity. And just like Bruce, like you're saying, that smaller home or the fixer-upper that you can afford to buy and put some sweat equity into, build equity. 7-8 years ago, the study had shown that 80% of rural Americans didn't have their retirement in the bank. They had it in the equity of their home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that's changed now, but that's very indicative of how important homeownership is, and especially in rural areas.
If you're just joining me, you are listening to a pre-recorded interview with Astoria City Councilor and Mayor-elect Bruce Jones and Warrenton Mayor Henry Balancifer. They are speaking about the just-released preliminary findings of a $100,000 study examining housing in Clatsop County. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KDCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. Henry, you were about to talk about what we can do to get those starter homes built in our area at a price that young families and families living, say, at the median income or below can afford.
So thank you, Joan. One of the things that we found in the housing study, and these are very, sometimes getting the data helps challenge stereotypes. And that stereotype is an understanding people generally operate as an assumption under. And so one of the things we found out was it's not that we're lacking houses. We have 1.4 households or housing units per household in the county. Now, you've got hundreds of vacation rentals in Seaside that are taking those household, you know, those housing units offline. I'm not bashing Seaside. That's part of how their economic engine runs.
Gearhart and Arch Cape and other beach communities, Cannon Beach.
True. So you first off, you notice you have houses, housing units, I guess you could say. The other part is they're not small enough. The new houses that are being built are all, I wouldn't call them McMansions, but they kind of are that McMansion, that 1,300, 1,500 square foot home with, you know, more than, you know, two or more bathrooms, four more rooms. There's a lot of those being built. As Bruce alluded to, there's not a lot of fixer uppers left on the inventory. Everyone bought them out and is now renting them out. But the other issue that was popped up in the housing study was that because of this price differential and because of all the new housing units that are being built that are really for a middle-aged person that should be buying their second or third home, in life, because we're not building the starter homes, people that otherwise would be buying those fixer-uppers or the starting homes are actually still stuck in apartments, which is creating a scarcity issue, which is driving up rents. And so because there's not enough apartments, you know, the cost goes up. Rent owners get a little bit more choosy too as well. And so people that really actually need apartments because they don't have the income source or otherwise to build up money to buy a house or can't afford a house, they're in apartments. The people that really should be moving into a starter home aren't. Either because they can't find a house or they can't, you know, now those are out of their price range. And so what the cities should be or could be doing, I should say, is looking at denser housing development, smaller homes, smaller lots, going back to looking at that like 1950s Sears house where 1,000 square feet, you know, 900,000 square feet starter homes and nobody's building them.
Yeah, density really is the key, especially in a city like Astoria, which is very limited geographically in the ability to expand. So medium density housing and high density housing are really going to be the keys, I think, to addressing the problem and mitigating it somewhat in the future. In 2015, Astoria did a housing study, which resulted in some recommendations to the city council in March of 2016 to look at lot sizes, look at reducing the minimum lot sizes from 5,000 to 4,500 square feet, for example, from increasing allowable lot coverage to looking at reducing setback requirements, off-street parking requirements, and height limitations as well. And at the time, because of objections from community members, and Henry had indicated earlier, a lot of these recommendations are unpopular, and they are, but across the state we're finding these are really the only ways to address the housing shortage. And so the city council at the time voted against most of those recommendations from staff, but I really do think it's time to bring some of those back again and take a close look at them. It's consistent with what the 2015 housing study found. It's consistent with what this 2018 countywide housing study has found. You really have to look at density, and it's getting those townhomes, cottage homes, row houses. It's older homes that could be converted to duplexes or apartments. That's how we're going to get more housing that is at a more affordable price point, even though if it's not technically considered affordable housing.
Does Astoria have the available land to do some of that?
There is some land. Some of it's in private ownership. Emerald Heights, for example, there's some buildable land left there that perhaps the property owner might be interested at some point in putting up more apartments, which would be snapped up pretty quickly, I'm pretty sure. There's some land in the owned by several different property owners in the near vicinity of Tongue Point. Some of that land would not be affordable housing, but it would be market rate housing, which would then take some of the pressure off for the total housing supply, as well as generating revenue for the city, which, of course, is important for us to be able to maintain the programs that we want. Also last year, we did look at the option of a construction excise tax on commercial construction, and I do think we need to look at that again. There's some examples around the state from Bend, for example, where they implemented a construction excise tax. I forget if it was 1% or plus or minus maybe a quarter percent of that. And that went into an affordable housing fund, as a result of which they were actually able to build several hundred units of affordable housing in Bend to meet their much more serious shortage of housing for workers, even worse than our situation.
Yeah, this is not unique to Astoria, Warrenton, or other communities in the county. Is our situation, we're in a rural area, we're dependent on service workers to fuel the tourism economy. Is our situation as severe as, say, Seattle and Portland, where you hear about astronomical rents?
I think that's, Astoria is a trendy place to be. it's a popular vacation spot, particularly for the Portland Seattle demographic. But I don't see it as bad as that. But it does spill over to the rest of the region, What I would say, though, Bruce really brought on a good point. It's not just affordable housing we need. We need to build some of the bigger, it's not popular to talk about, but some of those larger executive homes or doctor homes, I'd call them, those need to be built out as well. The whole housing supply in general needs additional development. If you look at CMH, I've heard of doctors being put in houseboats. You know, you want good quality doctors to stay here, you'd want them to stay. And I'm sure they probably don't want to live all their life in a houseboat or, always having to drive down and such like that. So that there is a general shortage of everything. And as you build up, people vacate and move up and the whole system kind of shuffles, forward, so to speak. There's bottlenecks in on the low end, on the high end, in the middle end. And Bruce, maybe you can delve into that a bit more. Warrenton doesn't have a whole ton of city-owned properties for housing development. I should put it that way. The one that I can think of, the Peterson property behind City Hall, half of it's wetland, which is going to significantly constrain its ability to be developed without significant cost. And of course, when you mitigate, you got to find some off-site place that you're going to have to take off the market as well. So it just becomes this kind of shuffling game. But how much property does the city of Astoria own?
It's fairly limited. There is some city land. You may recall the city did some property sales about 3 years ago, which generated some controversy at the time. People didn't want to see land given away, or not given away, but just sold, taken off the rolls. But we need to look at that again. There is some buildable city land, although I don't think it's really the solution to our problem. No. There's some privately held land, too, that we really need to look at how we can facilitate some construction out there.
How does the lack of affordable housing affect the economy? I mean, we hear the economy is just going gangbusters, yet wages haven't increased enough, so workers cannot find affordable places to live in many cases. Bruce, I'll let you start with that.
Well, I'm hearing anecdotally from business owners is that when they have job vacancies and someone applies from outside the local area, they won't even call the person for an interview because they know that more than likely the person will come here and after a month won't be able to find a place to live and will leave again. So I think it's affecting business owners in that way and being able to attract workers to fill some of those jobs.
Henry, what do you think?
There's a couple of things that go into this. I'll share a story here real quick. Police officer I was talking to, he doesn't go through drive-thrus because if he gets a call, he might get boxed in, can't get out. So he has to go in the restaurant. He's going to Taco Bell, for example. And it wasn't open. It was technically supposed to be open. It couldn't be open. It was because they didn't have enough staffing, even though they were offering above minimum wage. I think it was $13.50 starting. In some cases, they were trying to offer $15 to some people. To get people, but they couldn't find a work. Nobody was applying, and so they couldn't open that up. So he couldn't get a soda because they couldn't. They only had the drive-through open. Pacific Coast Seafoods, for example, is trying to, and Bornstein's even before them bought an apartment complex to try and house their employees. And Pacific Coast is looking at creating a dormitory, so to speak, for transient employees because. People make the argument, there's a lot of arguments of locals, I've got mine, why should we have to deal with them, or why should we help or spend public funds or whatever to support those? In this case, the public funds aren't being spent, but I've heard that actually quite a bit. Like when you're talking about selling of public land and all that, people get very, well, we need to solve the housing crisis, but not that.
Yeah.
Or not that. But in the Pacific Coast case, they want to allow dormitories. It'll be the first in the state that allows a dormitory, so to speak, in an industrial zone. It's very strict, and the state is working with us to craft the language. We're going to hold a town hall December 4th on that. But they're trying to put, you know, as the employees move from season to season to whichever plant is processing on that season, whatever it does. That's very common in the seafood industry. You don't keep a seafood plant running necessarily nonstop 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And so resource industries, particularly agriculture or fishing, is that way. But so they're actually trying to solve that issue. And I've seen lumber companies going back to the company town model. The Astoria Plywood Mill, for example, built quite a few homes in the, I believe it was the Plywood Mill when it was in operation here, built quite a few homes that are now standing in Astoria. Lumber mills and stuff like that used to build houses for their employees.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Ferris Lumber in Lyons is actually doing that with their new mass plywood products because they can't find the employees housing in the local community. The market is not producing enough. So they're just going to build a company town. And that was at the last, I think, regards to rural conference earlier this year. So those are, there's ways that are being, you know.
Yeah, codes tend to be written for generic situations. They don't necessarily work very well in unique situations. And I think a lot of Astoria's code was written in the 80s when tract housing was popular. So it was kind of designed for that generic American suburban model mm-hmm. where you'd have a home of a certain size and a yard and mm-hmm. a detached garage and then some off-street parking requirements. And clearly in a town like Astoria, there's just such a mix of different types of neighborhoods and homes that are in commercial zones that were once boarding houses for the fisheries, so the cannery workers. So there's need for a lot of flexibility in the code. And again, that's why I'd kind of like to take another look at some of those recommendations that were made in 2016.
Bruce brings up a really good point about how the codes have changed. And also, that also highlights the differences in the communities. In Astoria, particularly service workers can walk to work for the most part. If you can find something in the downtown core, you have a very interconnected, you got sidewalks, you know, good connectivity there. Warrenton's pretty spread out, you know, third or fourth largest, I think, or seventh largest.
Geographically, yeah.
You know.
In the state of Oregon.
And a lot of it's got no sidewalks. A lot of it's state highways that actually are connecting the city. And there's no roads that cut right through. You have to kind of ride around through Hammond to get to other parts of Ridge Road and vice versa. And so there's not that connectivity that you could get rid of off-street parking because everyone's going to have to drive to get to work. Just the way it is.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Astoria City Councilor and Mayor-elect Bruce Jones and Warrenton Mayor Henry Balensiefer for coming into the studio and speaking about the just-released preliminary findings of a housing study for Clatsop County. Thank you, Bruce and Henry.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
The Comprehensive Housing Study is a joint project of the Clatsop County Government and the cities of Astoria, Cannon Beach, Gearhart, Seaside, and Warrenton. It to help policymakers and officials understand the type, size, location, and price of housing needed to meet current and future needs. If you'd like to learn more about the study, it is available on the county government's website. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. The show is brought to you in part by a grant from the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Perspectives was engineered today by Brian Bovenizer. The show can be heard on the stations of Coast Community Radio, 91.9 Astoria, and 89.5 Tillamook. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.